The show you have selected will start directly after the next message.
If you are passionate about food and how it supports well-being and health, learn more. The Institute for Optimum Nutrition has been training nutritional therapists for 35 years on its highly acclaimed and accredited diploma courses. Start your new career in nutritional therapy, one that will make a difference and help others achieve their health goals. Train with the home of nutritional therapy education. Find us online and give us a call or click on the IOM banner on the UK Health Radio homepage.
Recovery Today on UKHealthRadio.com. Join me and my guests on this voyage of recovery and discovery.
Hello, everyone. My name is Jim Smith, and welcome to Recovery Today. My guest this show is an old friend called Andrew Wetherell. Now, Andrew's life experience brought him into working in the mental health field at all different levels. He's got a fascinating story and is a wonderful man. So without more to do, I'm going to let Andrew just introduce himself. And, you know, where did you start from, Andrew? Where did you grow up?
Well, I was born in Greenwich in 1964. I had two lovely parents, Rose and Bob. Mm. And we spent, I think, the first 4 years of my life in Greenwich. And then we moved to Loughton in Essex in sort of late 1968, early 1969.
And childhood memories, are they fond memories?
Fond memories of being at home, Jim.
Yeah.
Great times at home with Mum and Dad. Mm. My dad was my best friend in many ways, and he also was my best man at my wedding. Which was nice. Couldn't have chosen anyone better. Mm. But memories of, you know, those early memories of school times, infant school, primary school, secondary school. I never felt comfortable anywhere.
No.
You know, I didn't feel comfortable myself. I felt always less than, full of anxiety. I can understand that now, but I didn't know what was wrong with me back then. And always sort of not able to work anything out. Really, confused by everything and just not feeling adequate.
Yeah, yeah. We were talking earlier, weren't we? Because I was an only child. I was adopted and I was full of fear, really. Never, you know, didn't really want to go out to school. Wanted to stay safe and secure in the home. Mm. You know?
Well, that was my story as well, Jim. I mean, there's lots of parallels from those discussions earlier and, you know, just really kind of, if I was away from home, I felt homesick. When I was at school, I wanted to be at home, and it was just that sort of inner state of just feeling very uncomfortable everywhere I went.
So when you left school, what did you do?
Well, I wanted to go into the building game. I wanted to be a builder, inspired by my late father. He started off as a carpenter in the northeast of England, and then he came down to London and he studied for many, many years to become a structural engineer. And he was horrified when I left school with only CSEs and not particularly good grades in those either. Mm. And then we were chatting and he asked me what I was going to do, and I said, I think I'm going to go into the building game, I'm going to be a builder. Yeah. He was horrified because he'd been on building sites in the freezing cold, putting roofs up and that kind of work in the freezing cold in the northeast. And he said he was vehemently against me doing that sort of work. And so my next choice, I think he was a very gentle man, and he suggested, you know, think again. And my next thought, I had an uncle who was in the insurance business, and I thought, I know what, I'll either do banking or insurance. Mm-hmm. And by a kind of a circuitous route, I ended up working at an amazing firm in the City of London, a commercial insurance brokers, and I had probably 11 and a half, nearly 12 very happy years there.
Mm-hmm. And you spoke earlier when we were having coffee about the city being quite magical and exciting.
Mm. It was. I went for my interview and I was so hoping that I was going to get the job, and I got the phone call saying I'd got the job, and I thought, I can't believe my luck. You know, I'm going to be working in that magical place. You know, it's so vibrant, the bars, the pubs particularly, smoky pubs, and just the magic of the city. I just couldn't believe my luck.
You know, we don't often play a bit of music this early on in the show, but you, like my other guests, have chosen three pieces of music that have been meaningful to you. And I think this is a good time to actually play your first choice. Do you want to say a little bit about what it is?
Yes, Jim, absolutely. And I think guided by you, when we were chatting earlier over coffee and talking about that magic of the city, it just reminded me of Joe Jackson stepping out.
Yeah.
And it was just a magical piece of music for me.
Yeah, I remember it. And it was for me and is for me. It's it encapsulates all that, the nightlife, the excitement, the magic. So here's Joe Jackson. Thank you. Well, thank you, Joe Jackson. What a fantastic band and artist Joe Jackson is. Stepping out. So you were in this job, and it seemed, Andrew, it was safe, it was secure, enjoyable for about 13 years, and then you had to move on.
Yes. I mean, I'd worked in various departments within that company, and I knew everybody there. It was very, very safe and secure, like you said, Jim. And I'd been approached once by a former boss of mine, a lovely guy, that time, because he was trying to basically say, come and work for us, and I didn't go because of fear. I had a lot of fear about leaving. And then I suppose about 18 months, 2 years later, they approached me again and said, come and work for us. And I thought, well, now's the time. I've got to just sort of go with it, go with the fear. And I took that leap of faith and went to another insurance brokers in the City of London.
And what was the experience there?
Well, it was a prelude to change, Jim. It started off, it was bad, and it got worse. It was very different to where I'd been used to working. It was a very old building, whereas I'd been in a nice open plan, modern office, and I knew it inside out. And I was sort of plunged into chaos in this second company. No induction. Just working it, you know, lunging from one crisis to another. And long story short, I ended up with clinical depression.
It's funny, isn't it, looking back in hindsight sometimes, you know, the saying, it's a blessing in disguise. But, you know, I know a little bit about your life, and it was the catalyst, wasn't it, that job and, you know, and then your problems. But it was the catalyst that facilitated change.
It was, Jim. It was a big catalyst. It was a springboard, actually, into a whole new career. And at the time, I thought it was a disaster. I couldn't go back. I desperately felt homesick and wanted to go back to that original job. That wasn't possible. But I was catapulted into the realm, or the world, really, or realm of mental health. I didn't know what was going wrong with me. I had clinical depression, as I said, but I thought I had all sorts of other problems. I thought I had a brain tumour. Yeah. I was having panic attacks, or probably terror attacks. Panic probably is a too small a word. Yes. They were literally full of fear, you know, terrified of everything. Yes. And so that really led to a completely new career for me in mental health. So one door closed and several others then opened.
That's right. And what year are we talking about? It's in the 90s.
This was early 90s, Jim. It was about 1992. And I had some treatment in a private clinic. I was very fortunate. I was able to access that. And I met some wonderful people, some other patients who instantly made me feel as though I was normal. I'd gone from feeling as though I was the only person that had these problems, you know, feeling all sorts of very strange things about myself that I just didn't fit in. And all of a sudden there was these people that understood, and they helped me immensely.
Yeah, yeah.
The other patients.
So, yes, Andrew, you were experiencing, really, being a service user, and you were experiencing advocacy and self-help. In fact, fields that you were to work in much later. So it was quite a turning point. Just getting back to the depression, do you want to say in a few words how it was for you?
Absolutely, Jim. It was, well, I can remember trying to describe it to people, and a lot of people around me simply didn't understand. School friends, for instance. I remember a school friend saying, well, you know, you better pull yourself together, you're going to lose that job you've got. And but it was, I described it as a kind of Arctic wasteland where the only thing that flourished was doom and despair, lack of hope, kind of like a perpetual nightmare of the worst variety that never ended. It just went on and on. Every day was like Groundhog Day, and it just got worse. Thoughts of ending it, you know, suicidal thoughts. Luckily, I didn't have the courage to act on those. So fear, again, was another big issue. But meeting the other folks that were going through the same as me, I found immensely powerful.
There's a lot of parallels with our lives, because I can remember, oh too well, the feeling of isolation and desolation, thinking and feeling I was the only one going through what I was going through. Of course I wasn't, but that's how I felt. And actually for me it was in 1969 when I found a self-help group to help me with my issue, and the relief and the joy of actually connecting with other people that knew how I felt.
It's just a wonderful thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, that connection that you mentioned, and people that understand everything that you're going through.
Yeah.
And also what I got, and I guess it would be very similar for you, is that they gave me hope.
Yes.
That this too will pass.
That's right.
You know, things get better.
They do, don't they? Yeah. And actually being a member of this group, it was the forerunner, wasn't it? And you actually started a self-help group in Loughton with somebody else, I believe. Wasn't it?
Well, yes, there's a gentleman that I met, a lovely guy by the name of Len, who was attending as a day patient at the clinic.
Yeah.
And I mentioned this idea of mine of running a self-help support group for people with anxiety and depression. And Len said, well, look, I've been thinking about doing this for a long time. He said, why don't we do it together? He said, well, how about we use a 12-step approach? And I said, what's that? And he mentioned about the approach used by Alcoholics Anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous, and so on, many other groups.
Yeah.
And that triggered something in me, because for as long as I can remember, Jim, I'd always been fascinated with this group of people called Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm not an alcoholic, but I've been really interested. And Len said to me, he said, why don't you go to an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous? And so I did that. And it blew me away.
Yeah. I had to, for my social work course, I had to spend 6 months researching on groups. And I did this quite thoroughly. And I went back to the 50s in America, where group psychotherapy was kind of in its infancy. But, you know, all the origins, really, of where these people looked was Alcoholics Anonymous. Mm. It was a great reference point for all kinds of different groups, you know. So, obviously, as we know, it's reached millions of people worldwide.
Many millions, Jim.
Yeah.
And I was only recalling just recently that when someone's actively drinking in an alcoholic way or misusing drugs, that kind of thing, these addictions are very, very damaging. And the negative ripples from that kind of problem go out to many, many places.
They do. So how long you and Len were running this self-help group for people with mental health, emotional, drink and drug issues, how long did that last?
Well, I did that for 2 years, Jim, on a voluntary basis, and I think I learned a lot, but I certainly got a lot of help through that and from other people that had similar problems to me. It was incredibly powerful, and again, reminding me of the 12-step approach and, and the many, many groups that work on that basis and the many millions of people that that's helped around the world.
And what about your personal career? What came next after the self-help groups?
Well, I got into mental health advocacy. It was the early days of that in the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And I was fortunate. I got a couple of part-time jobs as an advocacy project manager. Mm. And so those two jobs together gave me a full-time job.
Mm.
And I did that for a few years. I then got involved with the United Kingdom Advocacy Network, UKAN, who still run today. They're a little bit smaller than they have been, but they're still doing some great work.
Mm.
And one thing leads to another. I met my current wife through UKAN.
Yes.
My wife, Roberta.
Yes.
We've been together now for well over 20 years.
Mm.
And it was down to Roberta that I got involved in mental health training with the Sainsbury Centre for Mental Health. And I've done quite a lot of training over the years through Sainsbury's originally, but now we run our own training company.
Yeah. What about your own personal issues, you know, the depression? You've managed that obviously over the years, if and when it returned. And
yes, I mean, I've got a lot of help, Jim, from the professional treatment community, great psychiatrist and various other people that have helped me. But particularly other patients, other service users have given me a lot of very valuable information.
Mm.
And I feel as though I've got a little bit now of knowledge, and I know now how to handle stuff. When things start to go wrong, I recognise early warning signs. Yeah. That's immensely helpful. And friends who are in 12-step recovery, most of my friends now are in some sort of 12-step recovery.
Mm-hmm.
And those folk immensely, you know, immensely help me. You know, just incredible the wisdom that you hear.
Yes, it certainly is. It is. I think this is a. This brings us to your second choice of music, which is become part of my life. Actually, as you know, I do a, you know, I tell my story with music. I've been doing this for 20 years, and one of the songs that features in my session is this very song that you've chosen, "The Streets of London" by Ralph McTell. And this song really is all about gratitude, isn't it?
Absolutely, Jim. Yeah, it's been a favourite song of mine for many, many years. And when I heard that you play it, and it was listening to you play, it's fantastic. And it just gives me an immense amount, I believe, an immense amount of gratitude for what I've got.
Mm. You might know this, but when Ralph wrote this song, he wrote it when he was in Paris. And he came back to London, he told his friend, "I've written this song. It's called The Streets of Paris." And he played it, and his friend said, "I love the song, Ralph, it's great, but I think you should call it The Streets of London." And I think that was a wise piece of advice, don't you?
Absolutely, 100%.
Well, here's Ralph McTell.
Have you seen the old man in the closed-down market, picking up the papers with his worn-out shoes? In his eyes you see no pride, and held loosely at his side, yesterday's paper telling yesterday's news. So how can you tell me you're lonely, and say for you that the sun don't shine? Oh, let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something to make you change your mind. And have you seen the old girl who walks the streets of London, dirt in her hair and her clothes in rags? She's no time for talking, she just keeps right on walking, carrying her home in two carrier bags. So how can you tell me you're lonely, and you say for you that the sun don't shine? Well, let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something to make you change your mind. And in the all-night cafe at 11:15, same old man sitting there on his own, looking at the world over the rim of his teacup. In each tea lasts an hour, and he wanders home alone. So how can you tell me that you're lonely? You say for you that the sun don't shine. Or let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something to make you change your mind. Have you seen the old man outside the seaman's mission? Memory fading with the metal ribbons that he wears. And in our winter city, the rain cries a little pity for one more forgotten hero and a world that doesn't care. So how can you tell me that you're lonely? You say for you that the sun don't shine. Oh, let me take you by the hand and lead you through the streets of London. I'll show you something to make you change your mind.
Well, that was Ralph McTell with The Streets of London. And do you know what? Once upon a time, I think it was 10 years ago maybe, I was asked to play. I don't know how I got the gig. I was asked to do my session at a church community, and I showed up there. It was in Sussex, and it was in this lovely little village, you know, and the church there in the community centre. And there were quite a few members of the church committee and the congregation there, and they were quite elderly. And after I played that that song, The Streets of London, this charming elderly lady who must have been 90 said, "Oh, what a lovely little song," she said. "Did you write it?" And I said, "No."
Well, you wish you had.
I wish I had, yeah. It's become an incredible song, really. Mm. Universal. Yeah. So all about gratitude. And when I actually do the session in the rehabs, you know, I say, look, you know, great gratitude. I've never seen anyone stay abstinent, clean, for very long without gratitude. And gratitude of itself is merely a feeling. Faith without works is dead. We need to show gratitude, to be grateful, to do things. Which brings me back to, you know, the interview and your career. And you've done a lot of things. And now, Andrew, there was a period in your life when you did quite a lot of work within the high security hospitals. Was that Broadmoor, Ashworth and Rampton?
That's right, Jim.
Do you want to say something about that?
Well, absolutely. I this was through Roberta, actually. I found out about this job that was going at the NHS Executive, the High Security Psychiatric Services Commissioning Board, otherwise known as the HSPSCB.
Yeah.
And my boss there, Howard, lovely man, and we became really good friends, actually. He's now moved to Australia. Mm. He was a great person to work with, and it was a wonderful part of my life. The work there didn't feel like work. We were going into Ashworth, Broadmoor and Rampton, taking the UK mental health service user survivor groups and the members of those groups into those high security hospital settings. Mm. And this was a piece of work which was very important, because it was taking all kinds of self-help support stuff from the National Service User Survivor Groups into a place where they'd never been before, those high security hospital settings. And all thanks to an amazing man, the late and great Ray Rowden, a wonderful nurse. Mm. And he was a guy who just made things happen, really. Mm. And he'd had an amazing life and lots of recovery in his life as well, actually. Mm. A wonderful man. And it was a wonderful 2 years.
During your time there, and in fact, all your working in different mental health settings, you must have seen some remarkable recoveries with individuals.
Quite incredible, Jim.
Yeah.
Yes. I was privileged to meet a number of people through the high security hospitals, but also the other work that you mentioned that I've done.
Mm.
And it's all been a privilege. And I've met people that have committed some terrible crimes when they've been very, very unwell,
yes.
when they've been in a psychosis. And then, of course, they've ended up in Ashworth, Broadmoor or Rampton.
Mm.
And then eventually they'll come back to reality and often faced with just a catalogue of dreadful stuff, index offences we call them, but, you know, commonly murder, rape, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And, of course, people that have kind of, they've got over this, they've had therapy, They've gained insight, and they've had to deal with an immense amount of shame, guilt, remorse, and there's a number of them that I've been privileged to know who have moved on. They've gone to sort of lower security settings. They've been supported through that process, and they are now living a meaningful life in the community, and most of them doing stuff to help others, actually.
Yes, yeah.
Which is quite a journey.
It is, it is. And there's nothing better, is there? Because I worked for 13 years for Barnardo's and with adolescents in care. I've met some of these young people that I work with in the last 10, 15 years and seen them in town and everything. And it's quite wonderful, isn't it, to see how people grow and develop.
It's fabulous. To use an old phrase, it just lights me up. It's a lovely thing to see. And I've seen a lot of it in 12-step recovery as well. I spend a lot of time going to open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous as a friend of the fellowship. And most of these people with their problems, their drinking and the associated behaviour, it's miraculous they're still alive. After what they've, the journey they've been on. And I look around these meetings, and I think to myself, wow, it's what a incredible group of people that have that have found an answer to their problems, and there's that camaraderie.
That's right.
And they help each other. And again, it's been said many times, but these people would not normally meet.
No, that's very true. And I mean, it's the essence of humanity, really. I think 12-step meetings and. I was very fortunate. I went to a rehab in 1976 called Pinnell House. It was the only rehab in the country, and it was founded by Dr. Max Glatt in 1952. And the patients there in the rehab came from all different social groups, had different stations in life, different statuses, and it was a really eclectic mix, but it was wonderful because we were all there because we, as we used to say, we're all there because we weren't all there. We're all here because we're all there.
Yes.
We all had big issues with alcohol and drugs. And, it didn't kind of matter, what we did or what class we were. It was wonderful. And I mean, that is the spirit of 12-step recovery groups, isn't it? Is
absolutely
that, equality. And
it's a wonderful thing. And I think it's that concept of these people have survived a common enemy, a common sort of shared experience there. And that creates an incredible bond, I think. I think that's what I've seen between people that are in this 12-step recovery program, which is a wonderful thing.
It does. But you must have experienced that in other ways with mental health advocacy and user groups.
Absolutely, Jim. I mean, I think what I've seen is the power and the energy of this thing, which is self-help support, the empathy, the shared experience, the people giving each other hope and inspiration. It's one of the things that we all need, isn't it? Hope. And we need to feel inspired. And I've had quite a lot of that. I've been sort of fortunate that I've had inspirational people around me. And a friend of mine who's now dead, but a guy who was in a 12-step recovery, used to say, if you could see the power of this fellowship, Andrew, it will blind you.
Well, Andrew, I was just thinking that from doing a job you detested, really, and led to mental health problems, you've had a wealth of experience working in mental health at all different levels, which ultimately led you to you and Roberta founding your own company, training company. Was that right?
That's right, Jim. Yeah, we started off in, it was around about 1998, delivering training, initially on mental health advocacy and service user involvement within mental health services. And that's now branched out through the Sainsbury Centre with clinical risk training.
Yes.
And I've been extremely fortunate. I met a lovely guy, my friend Steve, at the Sainsbury Centre, who taught me an immense amount about clinical risk. And thanks to him, I've spent the last, 14, 15, 16 years, whatever, I've lost track, but doing a lot of practitioner training all around the UK, from as far north as Invergordon to as far south as Jersey, actually.
Really?
And, and it's a lovely thing to do. I thoroughly enjoy meeting other, you know, these practitioners that are doing a great job helping people to recover from a whole range of different problems, you know, drug, alcohol problems, mental health problems of a whole range of different varieties. And it just feels as though it's a way of helping people to help others.
Most definitely. In fact, that's really been my involvement with you, hasn't it? A few months ago, I came with you up to the Highlands to actually learn this aspect of training, really. And because I qualified as a social worker in 1994. So it was quite exciting, really, to not really to learn new skills so much. I'd done risk assessment, but to learn a new way of training. And it was a wonderful experience. I think I called Invergordon, Inverglen, didn't
yes,
I?
Yes, you've got Inverglen in your head, which doesn't actually exist, does it?
No, it doesn't exist, but, you know, it'll always be Inverglen to me.
It was
a good experience. And then you suggested towards the end of the training that I might do my session, didn't you, of story and song?
Yes, and luckily you brought your guitar with you up to Invergordon or Inverglen. And it was just a wonderful 10 days, Jim, wasn't it? It was full of hope and inspiration. We met some lovely mental health practitioners up there.
We did.
Beautiful part of the world.
Yes, it was a wonderful part of the world.
Breathtaking.
Yeah, definitely. And wonderful people, wonderful practitioners.
Yeah. And your sessions, 30 minutes, 35 minutes or thereabouts, went down an absolute storm with, I mean, what I saw, the folks there, it touched something deep inside them. A lot of those staff, and I believe that they would have taken a lot of that away and passed that on to their patients and service users.
Well, I really hope so, and I was quite nervous, actually.
Can I say it didn't show?
No, but it's a bit like the old story of the swan, you know, above being still and graceful, and underneath she's paddling or he's paddling away.
Absolutely.
But it was a bit awesome in the sense that, you know, there were these professionals and it was a new kind of group I was playing to. But then I realised, hey, you know, the National Health Service kept me alive as a young man many times as a suffering addict. And in the last 2 years, as you know, I've had a couple of serious health problems and they've kept me alive and treated me for that. So it was a great opportunity to actually put something back. And as you say, you know, they can take that away with them. And because most of those practitioners worked in the field of drug and alcohol, didn't they?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And it was just a lovely experience. And it brought something quite special to what, if I'm self-critical, it's a bit of a dry old training session, clinical risk. And I think what you brought, Jim, was just a new element. And it just went down so well. Mm.
Andrew, we're coming towards the last several minutes of the interview, really. One exciting thing I think I'm going to share with the listeners is that you've been appointed as a non-alcoholic member of the board of Alcoholics Anonymous. So you're a trustee, but a non-alcoholic member. So that sounds pretty exciting. With that coming up and maybe a lot of other things, how do you see your life right now?
Well, that's a really interesting question, Jim. I mean, the board membership of Alcoholics Anonymous, the non-alcoholic appointee thing, is a wonderful thing, and I'm hoping to be of use to Alcoholics Anonymous if I get through the conference in it has to be approved in conference in April, but that's in God's hands, not mine. We've also got a small property portfolio. We're very privileged, and I think it's about, you know, looking after the tenants in the in those houses. I try to be a good landlord. We're very privileged to be in the position where we can sort of rent out properties and make money.
Yeah.
I think that carries with it a duty to look after the people that are in them. Yeah. I'm also developing an interest in homelessness, mental health, people with also associated drug and alcohol problems. And I don't know what to do there. I mean, I'd like to be of some use, but I think I have to be careful what I do, because I think sometimes you can do more harm than good if you do it in the wrong way, in the wrong time, or with the wrong people. So I'd like to do more to help people that way, be perhaps a little bit philanthropic. And one thing's for sure, I'm going to keep going to open AA meetings, you know, those open meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and some of the other 12-step programs that are around. I always find them intriguing and informative, and they've helped me no end.
Well, sounds you're going to be pretty busy. Your last piece of music, quite interesting. I don't know a lot about the artist who it's. Well, he's calling himself Passenger now, isn't he? But he was a band, or there was a band once. Do you want to say a bit about this choice?
Well, yeah, absolutely, Jim. It's an interesting piece of music. I like it. It's Let Her Go by Mike Rosenberg. He's a great artist. I just love everything he does. I've seen him in concert, and this piece of music just reminded me about contrast, and also try to be grateful for what we've got when we've got it, and you know, live for the moment, really.
It's about loss, isn't it, as well, the theme?
It is, absolutely, yes, about, you know, not really realising that you love someone until you've let them go, or maybe if you've lost them completely. And so I think that's there's a powerful message in Mike's work.
I look forward to listening to it. And but in the here and now, thank you for today, Andrew. I haven't known you very long, but in the short time I've known you, you know, you've been a wonderful friend, and you have a fascinating life. And I know you reach out because of your own, initially your own mental health problems all those years ago. It's enabled you to reach out to other human beings in the way you have done and continue to do. So thank you for your time today, and it's been a pleasure.
It's been an absolute pleasure for me, Jim. Thank you for inviting me.
Introduce your last piece of music.
This is Passenger and Let Her Go.
Well, you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. The bottom of your glass, hoping one day you'll make a dream last. But dreams come slow and they go so fast. You see it when you close your eyes. Maybe one day you'll understand why everything you touch surely dies. But you only need the light when it's burning low. Only miss the sun when it starts to snow. Only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low. Only hate the road when you're missing home. Only know you love her when you let her go. Staring at the ceiling in the dark. Same old empty feeling in your heart. Cause love comes slow and it goes so fast.
Well, you see her when you fall asleep, but never to touch and never to keep, 'cause you loved her too much and you dive too deep. Well, you only need the light when it's burning low, only miss the sun when it starts to snow, only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low, only hate the road when you're missing home, only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go. Burning low, only miss the sun when it starts to snow, only know you love her when you let her go. Only know you've been high when you're feeling low, only hate the road when you're missing home, only know you love her when you let her go. And you let her go.
Thank you for listening, everyone, and join me next time.
Here's the number of Alcoholics Anonymous. This is a fellowship for anyone who has a drinking problem. The number is 0800 917 7650. That's 0800 917 7650. The number of Narcotics Anonymous, this is a fellowship for anyone who has a drug problem. That's from 10 a.m. till midnight. The number is 0300 999 1212. 0300 999 1212. And finally, Al-Anon, which is a fellowship to support family and friends of the alcoholic. It's from 10 a.m. till 10 p.m. The number is 0207 403 0888. That's 0207 403 0888.